Hello and welcome to episode 20 of Living Off the Grid in the City with your host, once again, Hector Vladimir, here in Georgia of the United States in the Americas. Today is December 13th, 2015.
Edited and updated May 19th, 2024.
Today is, like I said, the 20th episode. I am going to begin to wind down to recap a lot of the points and begin to look forward to the end of this topic, the theme of the radio show, which is, of course, living off the grid in the city and the various methods, technologies, methodologies, and even the way of thinking of accomplishing such feat, or at least begin to accomplish such feat. As I have mentioned in the past, I am myself not 100% off the grid just yet. And this is basically something that is, depending on how you look at it, an impossibility. You cannot absolutely live 100% disconnected from all outside services, utilities, technologies, you name it. It is a more or less a label that is given to a certain type of individual, certain group, or certain way of life, and it is just that, just a label. You can define any way you want to, more or less, what living off the grid means. You can be happy with your definition and accomplishing living off the grid by your definition. Living off the grid, in my mind, personally, is living independently and self-sustainably to the best of your ability. If it is 100% to the best of your ability that you are living off the grid, it is a personal and individual state, a choice. It is an individual accomplishment that you recognize when you get there. You cannot live 100% disconnected from society and the grid, because you will always, as far as living in the city, use the roads. You will have to interact with other people, which are indeed connected very much to the grid. And you will have to use, at least here and there, many utilities that are provided from the outside. You cannot be 100% self-reliant in every aspect, in every way possible. That is just an impossibility. We are all human, and we all have limitations. We cannot be an absolute expert in every area. Having said that, you can accomplish a lot more if you educate yourself, if you group, if you unite, and if you relentlessly try to accomplish this very convenient and very advantageous state, which is being self-reliant, being as free as you can possibly be. And this is not just for your advantage, for your convenience or benefit. It is for the benefit of humanity as a whole, for the benefit of your environment and the planet, and even beyond that. You can look at it as you wish, and even put or assign reasons further than the ones I have given you here for you to get off the grid. I have defined what it means to me to be off the grid many times here during this show. For the most part, is just mentioned being as self-reliant as possible, especially with the conventional utilities, which is electric power, collection and use, water, collection and use, communication services, entertainment, use, and food production and consumption. Living arrangement, it is probably the most vital thing to attempt to achieve to be off the grid. A lot of people have different living arrangements who decide to get off the grid. People decide to just get on the road or out in the wild nature, woods, or out in open areas, desert areas, or not so desert areas like beaches, parks. You can decide to be mobile and live off the grid. I personally prefer and very much advocate to attempt to secure a homeland area. It is not so difficult in many areas here in the Americas. It may not be the most sought after area, but nevertheless it can be a very comfortable, habitable, livable area. In the next few shows, I'm going to attempt to wrap up and recap the technologies and methodologies that we have discussed throughout the show, bring in a few of the ones I may have missed that are important to anyone trying to live off the grid, and I will also wrap up and recap the reasons why you would attempt to live off the grid and have any efforts made for the same reason. In the last few shows, I will attempt also to mention a few groups and societies and peoples out there, maybe individuals that are on the national platform arena. Many of these groups and individuals are looking for active contributors, active members, etc. You can choose to join one of these groups or individuals or societies. So you can do a lot of things, get ideas, contribute, even join a community that chooses to live this lifestyle, this very exciting and interactive lifestyle, which is living off the grid. This is not only limited to the continental US or even to the continent of the Americas. This is a worldwide movement that is growing, apparently, as far as I can tell. And it is very much becoming a more and more accepted way of life and more recognized. Having said that, welcome to this 20th show. Today's episode will cover a few topics, perhaps more than a few. They include cooking, eating, drinking, bathing, and using wind energy while off the grid. I will be discussing each one of those topics separately, since they are very important for anyone attempting to get off the grid and still remain within the technological society of today's times. First, cooking off the grid. You can choose to do this several different ways. First way of doing it, the most energy efficient as far as being independent when it comes to energy, is cooking through a gas stove, preferably LP gas, but can also be natural gas. By using an LP gas or natural gas stove, you are removing that high demand, high consumption item from your electric grid, which is, like I've mentioned before, one of the most demanding and most bonding of the utility services, your electric service. As soon as you can remove a very high energy consumer as your stove from the electric, you are on your way to becoming free from utilities and off the grid. You can purchase a gas stove, you can rig one up, or you can build your own. I prefer and recommend for you to make effort to purchase one. Those are usually a lot safer and more convenient and easy to use than any other type of gas stove. Those can be, like I said, LP or natural gas. A lot of them are interchangeable, where you can buy natural gas stove and convert it just using a small adapter and convert it to LP gas. That's what I've done here in my home. Purchased a natural gas stove, and it has a conversion kit, I believe, that comes with the stove itself, or it needs to be purchased separately, but it was only a small nut that needed to be changed. Performed that, and it's now a long running now, close to about 3 years running, liquid propane or LP gas stove, and has saved me hundreds, if not thousands, of kilowatt hours since I began using it. It may have not saved me as much money as I planned or wanted to because of forces outside of my control, but it is just one more step I have taken and recommend many to take to get off the grid. You can also buy or purchase or make, rig a wood stove. A wood stove is nothing but a metal, usually steel, enclosure for wood and having a platform up top which gets very hot by the fire and gases created by the wood fire within the stove. These type of stoves are probably a bit more expensive than your everyday conventional electric or gas stove, since they're somewhat of a rare or less available technology. You can purchase them that I've seen at your major hardware store, preferably, and probably more available online for delivery at a fee.
You can easily acquire those on trading websites or thrift websites such as Craigslist and other websites which have people selling items locally. Even on eBay, which is a national trading website, may have people selling those, being able to deliver or ship those for a fee. You can also have, very similar to the wood stove, coal stoves, which are even less available. It's an even rarer technology, but nonetheless existent. So I would research those and see how those can work out for you. It may be a way for you to remove that very expensive and very consuming electric stove from your home. You can also purchase, rig, or build your own paper stove. Again, when I say rig or build, you have to consider your capability, your skills, and your budget. Building a piece of technology may cost even more than purchasing an existing technology, so you have to consider that well. You may consider building or rigging one up if the item is just not available in your area, or if the item is just outside of your reach as far as buying it or even acquiring it, depending on how remote you are or what part of the world you live in. Purchasing it may not be a choice. Building it and rigging it is a very, very likely to be difficult choice, a difficult task. It's going to require planning. It's going to require testing. It's going to require building skills, somewhat engineering mindset, so you can safely perform such tasks. You can use existing structures to build your stove. Make sure the materials are compatible and suitable for high temperatures, which are achieved inside and outside of a stove. Steel and other high temperature metals can be a choice for such existing structures to rig one up or build one from scratch. Make sure if you use steel, use a steel of thick gauge or with a pretty substantial thickness. That way it won't just rust away and melt and soften as the fire burns inside. Depending how thin the steel is, this will happen. It will warp and very likely just rust away very quickly. Especially if you leave it outside or the elements outside, rain, sun, moisture, and all that. You can also just choose to purchase or make a charcoal grill. A bit easier than attempting to make or rig a stove. A stove is usually something you can close the fuel into a compartment. Fuel will burn and heat up the plates for cooking, usually on top of the stove. In very high contrast, the charcoal grill has an open flame, and like the name suggests, it has a grill where you can put any kind of pots or even the foods to cook directly with contact with the fire or the gases being expelled by the fire, sometimes called a smoke grill because of the high amount of smoke that can be created by charcoal. So that is an option for you to get off the grid. May not be the most optimal or attractive option, but it is, however, an option. And you can also choose to go the solar route. Depending on the area where you live, there may be plenty of sun during the day, even late into the evening, or you can have a solar cooker. A solar cooker, as I have mentioned before, is nothing but a reflector or light concentrator with a reflector, which is able to concentrate light in a point in front of the parabola or parabolic dish that can be either built or rigged up with an existing structure or dish. All you have to do is get this parabolic dish and either paint it, or you can also just work the paint out and polish it to a metallic shine to where it will reflect the sunlight into a concentrated spot in front of the dish, and that's where you would be placing the pot, the frying pan, or whatever other container, preferably metal, that you may have for cooking. Moving on to the next topic, eating off the grid, which is a ramification or a offshoot from cooking off the grid. Eating off the grid is more like food that you don't really have to cook. For example, non-perishables, food that you grow, such as vegetables and fruits, and food that you may have bought in bulk. Again, the non-perishables or food that you even hunt, fish, or acquire in one way or another. Of course, food that you may hunt or fish, those, of course, you have to cook. However, I will be including those here in this section. Eating off the grid. Non-perishables are canned foods, foods that are in some way or another treated or made so they are preserved for longer periods of time, much longer than your average fresh foods that you buy from the market. These foods, you can, for the most part, just buy them from a food store, supermarket, or just the store that may sell them. You may stock them. You may buy them at a discount from different areas in your surroundings and stock them and consume them as you go. I do consider this practice to be an off-the-grid practice, although you are depending on stores. You, however, are not dependent on one store or a supply store, which may have you dependent on it. This is very different. Since you are in control of what you buy, how much, and where, you can consider this an off-the-grid practice and find much more value foods, much lower prices, better quality, and you can buy certain foods at certain times of the year, allowing for better prices, better values, and allowing you to stock those non-perishable foods. Even though they are labeled non-perishable, they do perish eventually, but they are usually a lot longer lived than most other foods. You can also grow your own foods. You can have a garden, depending on the area of the world that you live, even in the north and deep south latitudes. Growing food is a possibility, with the help of greenhouses, of course. But in many areas of the world, within the tropics and even the subtropics, you can grow food sometimes year-round and have no issues with having to run out of food or even buy food from any other sources. You can grow vegetables. You can grow potatoes. Potatoes grow in many different areas of the world in many different climates, including colder climates. You can grow many other edible roots like yucca, sweet potato. You can grow a variety of other things like carrots and other things that are very nutritious and can be consumed locally right there as you grow them. Many different types of peppers, many different types of tomatoes and things like that. Fruit growing is another option. Fruits can be grown in many areas, including colder climates, but mostly in the warmer climate areas. If you're lucky enough to live within the subtropics and tropics, you can grow them near year-round. Pear, peach, apples, oranges, you name it. All those and many more fruits can be grown in many areas. So consider the area where you live. If you do have some land, however small it may be, you may be able to grow at least a few fruit trees and be supplied with fruits. You can, as I mentioned, buy bulk foods throughout the year and throughout many different areas, taking advantage of the time of year and the area for the prices so you can get a better value. You can just store this preserved food or freeze it if you're able, if you have the energy capability to do so and still remain off the grid, at least in part. You may be able to be off the grid for everything but a freezer that you may want to preserve meats, other fruits, and foods that you may want to consume weeks, months, even a year later. There are many options of buying frozen foods out there that I'm aware of. Research those, and those may be an option for you to be independent from local supermarkets and stores. Those are usually companies that ship frozen goods to their customers. I'm not sure about the pricing for those, but they are apparently an option that is growing in popularity. You can also grow not only vegetables and fruits, but livestock. Livestock can supply a steady amount of highly nutritious meat and protein. By far, I believe, the last time I researched this, rabbits are the fastest growing type of meat and the one that will supply you with the most meat throughout the year. So growing rabbits for meat is a very attractive and cost-effective option for anyone attempting to get off the grid. You may need to get used to the taste, get used to the procedure for preparing such meat. And if you choose to go rabbitless or without them, you can also consider chickens, a bit more expensive and costly to maintain an available meat supply for that, since they grow up much slower than rabbits and reproduce much slower as well. A bit trickier to get a steady supply of chickens for meat. You can use the eggs from hens. Egg-laying hens are abundant out there, and you can easily have a continuous supply of high-protein eggs, which will likely help you get off the grid as far as your food consumption is concerned. You can also be a bit more elaborate and high capability by growing pigs and even cattle. Of course, it will take a lot more space, more effort, more skill, more knowledge, more resources, but this is a real option and one that is available for most people that are able physically, mentally, and with the land availability. So do consider pigs and cattle for your meat supply if you are attempting to get off the grid and go big. You can also go even a bit more ambitious and even hunt your own meat. This includes the hunting of deer, caribou, boar, turkeys, even ducks and other birds, geese, pigeons, a variety of other fowl. Of course, this will take a lot of training, lots of patience, lots of knowledge, lots of research to be done. Not to mention all the intricacies and safety concerns of gun using and ownership. If you decide to go without firearms, it gets even more difficult with bows and arrows or trapping wild animals. It's another option. I personally prefer not to go that route, but of course there are many that are able and willing to get into the hunting side of living off the grid. Moving on, drinking fluids off the grid. What I mean by that is drinking the many fluids that a human needs, not by any means alcoholic beverage. This is water drinking, juice, and other drinks that are good for human health. These fluids drinking can be done while living off the grid or attempting to get off the grid. Can be collected, can be acquired without depending on any outside source, or at least very little outside sources. You can grow fruits and blend fruit juices or squeeze fruit juices or pour fruit juices from the fruit of the trees that you may plant. For example, you may have coconut trees and get the coconut water, get a steady supply of that, which is a nutritious and very flavorful beverage there. If you're lucky enough, that is, to live in the tropical areas where those grow, like Florida, Texas, and maybe Louisiana and Southern California. Here in the United States and many other countries and parts of the world in the Americas and elsewhere. You can also grow fruits that you can blend into juices and freeze those. Freeze the concentrate. You're able to make concentrate from those nectars. You can blend whole fruits and make concentrates like orange, pear, apple, and make a wide variety of juices and mixes. And use those for yourself and those around you that may be looking to get off the grid as well. You can even produce enough of those to even sell or trade outside of your immediate group. So that's something to consider as an income. And talking about income and money, I would like to take a small interlude here and mention that the financial advantage is one to consider when getting off the grid. You will be able, for the most part, to save more money if you are working while getting off the grid, like most people that attempt to get off the grid. It's not like the popular wisdom of a backward, lazy, truncated individual or group which is in a small community or home that refuses to do anything. No, this is by far erroneous and far from the truth. Most people that attempt to get off the grid are hardworking and very successfully money-generating folks. They are by no means lazy or attempting to just stop working. This is perhaps the opposite of what those people are. Most people, to my knowledge, that have had an interest in getting off the grid are people that work for a living, that would like to work less or use their monies elsewhere other than paying bills, more the latter than the former. This is because many people that are looking to get off the grid do it for the freedom and the wish to do more, not do less, with both the money and the time that they make, that they have. So living off the grid will allow you to save more money if you are already making money, however little it may be. You will be able to save more of that money and use it for things that you really want to use it for, like things that will make you and your family and your neighbors, anyone around you, better. You can use that money to purchase more of your freedom. Sadly enough, that's just the way it is working right now. That's the way the system is set up. So we have to attempt to navigate the system. So buying a lot of your freedom is an available option for a lot of people, as sad as it sounds, but it's however a hard reality. You can buy a lot of your freedom. How? By buying land, property, goods, which will enable you to do more and generate either more money or goods, and that is power and freedom in basic terms. So
I would like to take a moment here and clarify that this is no longer my stance. I now believe that although it is possible to buy comfort and certain powers with money, this is not always the case. Money and property bring ties and dependence to those, more dependence on the monetary system and on comfort. And this dependence is counter to an off-grid lifestyle. Also, more money does not and should not equal more freedom. All persons should be free and live happy lives without the need of money. And to attempt to buy your freedom is participating in a system that sells freedom. Therefore, this participation props up a system that enslaves the poor. However, I still agree that we must navigate the system in which we are placed from birth and attempt to change it for the benefit of all.
Also, the skills that you gain and the methodologies that you learn through your journey in getting off the grid will more likely help you be a more resourceful person, thus increasing your chances of making more money. It is not a guarantee, but it is, however, a very likely scenario where you will find ways to make more money and make not only more money, but produce more goods and increase trade and increase the movement of goods around you. That is just a reality. You can also do more without money because of the knowledge
that you learned in your journey,
which is a very big part of doing what I advocate here, which is getting off the grid. You can do more with less money or with no money at all. And at the same time, like I said, you will be able to save the money, however little it is that you do generate. So this is a huge area to consider there, and one that I may come back to and do a whole show about. Moving on, bathing while living off the grid. Unlike many think out there that people that live off the grid are just dirty and savage individuals that hardly ever take showers, this is far from the truth, and it is perhaps the opposite. You can have, if you wish, plenty of water, perhaps more water available than you do have right now for less money, just by following very simple and very available methods and technologies and using available technologies out there to collect water and use water efficiently and with conservation in mind. You can collect rainwater, you can collect water from rivers, streams, lakes, and you can also pump water from underground sources. These are all sources that are available in most areas of the world, perhaps only aside from desert areas that get very little rain and have very little masses of water, whether above or underground. Nevertheless, most habitated areas in the world are areas which sustain and do have a lot of water available. For the most part, the most populated areas in the world are so populated because of the water availability of the area. If water was not as available in that area, there would not be such high population. That is just a known relationship. Rainwater collectors are a very attractive option. They are easily built with very little resources and funds. There are various and many other plans and blueprints for water collectors for the rain. You can collect water from your roof, channel it to some type of tank or container. You can channel rainwater from upside down umbrellas. You can collect rainwater with just a couple of swimming pools out there that you may just lay out, those inflatable swimming pools. Or you can just put a whole bunch of containers out there. Those containers that people use for storing things, putting clothes, putting their Christmas decorations, stuff like that. Just buy maybe like 24 of those, which are probably about $3 to $5 a piece. Do a little investment there. Spend a couple $100, buy you about 24 of those, lay them out in your yard, given that you have one. And if you get enough rain throughout the year, those will remain with a very good, if not sufficient, amount of water ready for your use for any type of use, whether it's drinking, bathing, washing, cooking, all of that. You can also get more elaborate by several hundred or thousand gallon tanks and channel rainwater to those. You can also get more elaborate and pump water. Invest in a small pump and a few hoses or tubing, pipes, PVC or flexible PVC. And you can tap into your local river, your local stream, or even underground. You can hire a company to dig an underground well and get your water from there. Of course, you would have to most likely clean your water before you use it, especially for drinking or cooking. You can get elaborate with cleaning the water, but you don't really have to. You can just filter water with fabrics. You can filter water with some salts and some minerals, which are readily available, and directions and instructions and how to do that is widely available on the internet. I won't go into details for that. Again, you can collect water from rain. You can pump water from underground or rivers or any kind of pond or stream. Preferably running water from a stream or river is a cleaner source of water, but any other source of water can work as long as it's not contaminated or polluted. Water can also be for bathing. You can also have a water heater installed on top of your roof if you live in a hot, sunny area. This is an attractive option there. And when I say water heater, I mean a solar water heater. That's very simple. The only thing that you need is a tank to collect the water or store the water in. And this tank needs to be either black or clear, at least clear enough for sunlight to come through and heat that water up within that tank. I've seen this a lot in island countries and hot weather areas where you can just put a tank and the heat itself will heat that water up and get it ready for bathing or doing any kind of washing. You can install that tank on top of a home if your roof is sturdy enough to support such tank, depending how big that tank is. If it's a small tank, you need not a very strong roof. You can support it on a structure to where it sits higher than your shower or the water outlet, so it can come down through gravity. Of course, if the water in the tank is not supplied by the rain, then you would need to pump that water up to that tank to the level where it will come down through gravity into the spigot, your shower, or your faucet. So that is a very attractive possibility there where you have that tank and, depending on the area where you live, can supply you with warm water without the use of any kind of water heat or water heater. Of course, hot water or warm water is not as sought after in hotter climates than it is in northern or deep southern locations where it gets rather cold, especially during the winter. However, it is an option even in the subtropical regions where you can heat the water enough to use or just use less energy heating water up that is already warm from the day's sun. By the way, this can work in cooler climates. It's just that it will take a more elaborate system that traps heat and does not let the cold air
cool the water inside.
Most likely a double-walled clear tank, which, however available it may be, is a lot more difficult to attain than a single-walled tank. Moving on, wind energy. Wind energy, as I have discussed in the past, can be a bit more complicated and costly to deploy than solar, photovoltaic, or solar heat concentrator energy and energy sources. Wind energy usually takes advantage of a technology called wind turbines or windmills. Turbines vary in size, looks, and operation, but they are somewhat similar. The wind turbines can range from just a few dozen inches
or centimeters
to hundreds of feet
or meters
in the rotor diameter. Your rotor, which is basically rotary wings, could vary from 2 to about 24 blades. The most common ones have about 3 to 5 blades. And I believe the more blades, the more torque, the more watts or higher power rating.
A better relationship is the larger blades could turn a larger generator, therefore having more torque and more capability to generate energy.
So do consider those. I believe the more the power rating, of course, the more cost and the bigger it may be. So do consider that. Do some research. You do have to install wind turbines at a considerable height, over 30 feet.
Or 9 meters.
Perhaps a lot more than that, 40 to 50.
Or 12 to 15 meters.
It's more recommended. 40 to 50 feet.
Or 12 to 15 meters.
Up in the air will put the device within sight of many, many people, if not most people in your neighborhood, if you do live in a neighborhood. So that is something to consider. Why does it have to be that high up in the air? Because the wind is a lot more abundant and steady, stronger up higher, because of the many obstacles, trees, hills, houses that may be around blocking the wind. And these are usually within the 30 foot
or 9 meters
height. Trees very normally go above 30 feet
or 9 meters.
So you want to be above that. The noise is another challenge for most people that attempt to erect a windmill or wind turbine, especially within a city or city limits. Wind turbines could be costly, could be difficult to install, could require a lot of funds to install. So that is something to consider. Again, could be noisy and could make neighbors a bit mad and may even trigger complaints from neighbors, the city, state, and also the HOA, which is your homeowners association, can file complaints and attempt to have you remove your technology, however much you may have invested in it. So you do have to, before you even consider it, you have to research, see what the regulations are for your HOA, your city, county, state, etc., even the federal regulations in some areas. Again, height of the wind turbines are a challenge to consider. Noise are another challenge. I have a very small 400 watt 21 inch rotor windmill installed in my home, and it is quite noisy at times. I am lucky enough to live in a area where homes are not so close together. They're relatively far apart, and the noise is not as high to bother the neighbors much. I am able to hear it even from the neighbor's home when it's kicking, when the wind is turning it pretty good. So also, looks, people may not like the way it looks. People may consider it a unsightly installation, which may deter anyone from wanting to join the neighborhood or buy property in the neighborhood. They may think it may bring the property value down with some reason. This may be true in a lot of areas, and this is something also to consider. If you are willing for the fight, if you're willing to put up a fight, you can and attempt to keep your technology or erect it. However, be ready for a perhaps difficult time there in many areas. You may be able to use the technologies with no problem at all, regardless of where, how large or noisy or tall the technology is. You may live in an area where neighbors are far and few in between, or in an area where regulations allow for such technology to come up. So if you are lucky enough to live in those areas, by all means, if you can afford and have the capability to install such technology. Wind is said to be cheaper than solar energy and many of the other alternative energies in the long run. So if you are able to afford a large wind turbine, have the land area, and are able to deploy this technology, by all means, do it. This has been a discussion of a few topics: cooking, eating, drinking, bathing, and using wind energy off the grid. We have discussed cooking off the grid with several types of technologies and stoves, even solar cookers and reflectors that you can build or purchase. You can eat normally and very freely off the grid with non-perishables and other fruits and vegetables that you may grow, even livestock. We also discussed the different types of livestock that you may choose to have and bring up, and even the option of hunting wildlife and use that for your meat
supply.
We also discussed how you can keep a very good amount of liquids for drinking and even supplying some of those beverages to other people for trade or as a income. And on that same line of thoughts, I discussed the very attractive financial advantage of saving money while living off the grid and purchasing more power and freedom. We also discussed bathing off the grid, how to collect water to do so, how to collect water to drink, especially with rainwater collectors, and ways to pump water from different bodies of water, whether above or underground. We also discussed wind energy in some detail and some of the advantages and disadvantages of using and deploying such technology. This has been episode 20. From Living Off the Grid in the City. This again has been a production from your host, Hector Vladimir. Today is December 13th, 2015.
Updated and published May 20th, 2024.
I do thank you for listening and for supporting and shooting the comments and the recommendations to our show. I hope to attract your attention once more the next episode, and you have yourself a great rest of the day. Thank you.